One of the unexplained oddities of this time was the absence of much of the nation's top military leadership. Just as the situation in Iraq was deteriorating, there was a series of retirements and replacements among the top commanders handling it. The changes would occur, just as Garner was succeeded by Bremer, with ill effect. At the top of the chain of command for operations in Iraq, General Franks seemed quickly to have detached from Iraq issues. Some of those who worked with him found him remote and even out of touch in the weeks after the fall of Baghdad. Franks was getting ready to retire, while Abizaid was not yet confirmed by Congress to succeed him as the top U.S. military commander for Iraq and the rest of the Mideast. A Pentagon official said that top officials got wind at one point that Franks planned to fly from the Mideast to Tampa, pick up his wife, and take a long weekend, maybe in the Bahamas. Franks ultimately was ordered not to. He put his pack down early, said a former senior administration official. He couldn't even be found a lot of the times. General Shinseki, the chief of the U.S. Army, left the stage at about the same time. Neither Defense Secretary Rumsfeld nor Deputy Defense Secretary Wolfowitz attended the scorned general's retirement ceremony. Wolfowitz asked to come, but Shinseki declined to invite him. It was an extraordinary situation. While the nation was at war and American soldiers were dying, the Pentagon's top civilians were estranged from the Army's leadership. What's more, it was the second bitter departure of an Army four-star general under Rumsfeld. General Henry Hugh Shelton, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had retired in 2001, just weeks after 9/11, disgusted with Rumsfeld and feeling he had recklessly disregarded sound military advice. After General Keane declined the job of succeeding Shinseki, Rumsfeld, in an unusual move, passed over all the Army's active duty 3- and 4-star generals, normally the ones who would be considered, to appoint as chief a retired general named Peter Shoemaker. When Rumsfeld's aides first contacted Shoemaker, they reached him on his cell phone in his pickup truck near rural Hyco, Texas, a bit north of Fort Hood. The retired general thought he might be getting a prank call from the rancher he'd just left. Furthering the Army's isolation, Shoemaker was an outsider. He had spent most of his career in special operations, which often acts and is treated as if it were a separate service from the Army. On the ground in Iraq, the structure of U.S. forces also was in flux. After being told for 2 weeks that both the 1st Cavalry Division and 1st Armored Division would be deploying, Colonel Agoglio was told on April 30 that the 1st Cav wouldn't be coming after all, and that the 3rd ID would be leaving after the 1st AD arrived. "So we have a net gain of zero," he calculated to himself. "You're kidding me." In addition, instead of having Iraq run by General McKiernan and his staff at Siflic, the headquarters for the ground invasion force, the staff of 5 Corps, a smaller group, was going to be put in charge. This meant that an experienced team that had worked for months on Iraq issues was being replaced by a smaller, less capable, and less seasoned staff. McKiernan's headquarters was especially attuned to the tribal structure of Iraqi society, an intelligence officer recalled. "They were sent home, and that expertise and capability went with them. We spent from May 03 to December 03 trying to rebuild that capability." What's more, a general named Ricardo Sanchez was going to take over 5 Corps at the same time. So now you have the most junior headquarters in the theater, with the most junior commander in the theater, taking over, Agoglio recalled. You've got the entire military chain of command changing. Agoglio also moved, rewarded for his 2 years of nonstop work in the frying pan of planning wars for General Franks, by being thrown into the fire as the military liaison between the CPA and Central Command.